Let's first show, just to give so where does this number come from? That the number that you mentioned comes from. Of course, I could only mention the number on the list because I have a system of keeping track of it. There is a file in the context distribution, status.marc4.lua, and actually that one keeps track of all the changes and keeps track of where I am. So if you really want to know which modules need to be done and what work need to be done, you can look into that file. So we are now back to 8 core modules to do and 6 pending. Pending means that I have to think about added functionality and things like that. We have to prolong them. But on the other hand, there's a new list for the Lua modules and other things added. So I'm back to a few hundred again. Nevertheless, the cleanup. First of all, the move to Mark IV is I think turned out to be way more than supporting an engine. I still remember the first experiment with LuaTech. That was like, okay, we can pipe something to tech, we can do some fun stuff with a box or whatever, and that's about it. I could never have predicted that it would have ended here. In so much work, basically. Because, as it says here, the move to Mark IV is more than supporting an engine. It's basically a complete rewrite. All code is being rewritten, looked at, updated, and it's a good opportunity to prune all kind of stuff that should no longer be there because it's outdated, because we have a new engine. Or maybe extend some of the stuff because it's now easier to extend it, or about time to extend it, and to clean up a lot of things. And we are talking about thousands of files and probably hundreds of thousands of lines of code. So it's really there are sometimes moments that you think, why am I doing this? But anyway, if you start, you have to finish.
You're lucky that you're not breaking things on the way.
I'll come to that. Well, this sentence already says it. We are somewhat crippled by the fact that we want to remain compatible. Now, if you look at, let's say, basic document processing, start text, stop text, you already mentioned a command, you want to start a chapter, an itemize, whatever. That doesn't change anything. That there's no reason to change it. But of course, there are always users who have been stretching the system to the limit, looked into the source, hacked this or that, did things that were not supposed to do, but I did it, yeah. Yeah, okay, then you can suddenly find out, oops, this is not working anymore. Yeah, well, you were never meant to use that macro, that low-level macro. Often, there's another way to do it. There's a better way to do it. But you need to definitely keep in mind that there are users who use the stuff and that you cannot break things. Sometimes we sacrifice a little bit of compatibility by getting rid of old stuff. In earlier talks, I already have mentioned these things. For instance, font encodings are completely gone. I don't think any user will regret that font encodings are gone. If you still use them, well, good luck. They will not come back. And there are a few more of those things. Input encoding is UTF-8. Of course, you can have all kinds of additional input encoding regimes, no problem. But the internal encoding is UTF-8, period. So what's the current state? It's, as I already mentioned, it's way more work than I thought. So it takes a bit longer than I expected it to take. However, most of the tech code is done. There's a bit of structure-related code, because structure-related code is, if I think most users who present here who use context can confirm that the structure-related code is the always a bit, it's the more, most difficult code, because people want to tune things, people want to plug in their own code to do headings or listings or whatever kind of stuff. This is the tricky code. And multi-column typesetting is on the agenda for being redone. So I have postponed that a bit. What's new is that we have, well, there's a more good opportunity to do it at the same time, to introduce a complete new name space system. So all macros that we don't think that users should ever touch are now protected by namespaces. You might wonder, why wasn't that the case before? Well, first of all, they were sort of protected, but we found out that users still use those protected macros. They found ways to do it, so they are now protected even more. And just a completely different reason is that in the past, and when we started writing context, there were always constraints, memory constraints, the size of string space, all kinds of stuff. You couldn't make such names for macros simply because tech would, after a few files, bomb out of memory. Nowadays, it's absolutely no longer a limitation. So another different thing is you wrote this macro because, well, it took only one hash entry. If you would split it up in 20 small pieces, you would waste 20 hash entries, and you didn't have that many hash entries at some point. Context several times hits the boundaries of tech, and we could find ways to re-implement things and do things differently, and getting some depth. Nowadays, it's less of a problem. So the boundaries are gone. The same is true for, there were 256 counters, so you were reusing counters. Nowadays, you have so many counters that it doesn't matter if you waste a few that are only used for this particular piece of code. In the past, you didn't do that. And then, as a side effect, what you could see is that users would, well, they knew those variables exist, they misuse them, whatever. Now they can happily define their own because there is simply more available. So namespaces is, you don't actually need to check it for more consistency. So what's there to do? There's still some code that I think that could be made, written more generalized, in the sense of I can, it's still context. I'm not talking about generalizing using another thing, but by generalizing I mean is that you have a mechanism that you say, wait a minute, it can do this, but it could also do that. So if you generalize and make it configurable, like everything is configurable, it can do more things. Less code can do more. There's quite some layer and positioning code. I think that can be optimized because it's putting some burden on the processing time and the amount of code generated, PDF code generated. Structure-related, so this is really something if you talk about sacrificing compatibility. It's possible to hook commands into existing commands. Say you have a chapter heading and you want to have the number and the text in some way positioned relative to each other. There's a way to hook in a command that does that for you. But nowadays we have way more information. So with a section title we can have bookmark information, list information, reference related information. There can be user data, so you can, with a title of a chapter, you can pass information about an author, of a date, or whatever you want to be passed with that. Arbitrary data can be passed along with any section header. So you can, for instance, say, this chapter has a certain name, there's a certain image that nicely reflects what this chapter is about. This is something that first showed up when we were typesetting math books. Here you have math book, chapter about functions, and the first nice image on page 4 is a nice function, whatever. So there's a sort of recognizable image with a chapter. And this is something that you want to somehow define in relation to this chapter. So nowadays you can say, okay, this chapter has this title, this image comes with it, and we use this image on the title page, so if you generate a chapter title page, you get that image. But we might want to have the same image shown in the table of contents in a small insert. So you want to reuse the information. So this information that we define basically when the chapter starts, is traveled through the system and is available when you typeset the table of contents. So there's a lot of information traveling around the system. And this means that it's no longer enough to say, okay, I set a table of contents entry, it has a number, a title, and a page number. No, if you want to have this image, yeah, it's no longer a macro with three arguments, but it's basically a construct with named arguments. So hash 1, hash 2, hash 3, it makes no sense anymore. It's easy to say, I'm typesetting this line in the table of contents, give me the title, give me the page number, give me the number, give me an image, give me this, give me that. So the whole system of overloading functionality or hooking in functionality is going to be changed to a secondary system, so I will keep the old one to remain compatible. That's actually a burden, I would say. Ideally, I would kick it out. Yeah. A new system which uses the setups mechanism, most users, context users probably know that, and just has named variables and things like that. So that's an important change. It's partly in place. It's very tricky to implement this, especially because there's synchronization issues going on, but also because you want to keep the old mechanism. This is one thing where you have to fight compatibility. Lucky me is that Wolfgang knows this code pretty well. So it's something like if I mess up, he somehow always fixes it. So that's why I can permit myself, and that's really a lucky situation. I can permit myself to do really drastic changes because I know that there's somebody out there who can fix a lot. That's a really pleasant idea. There will be new page builder variants. So we have, of course, single-sided pages, single-sided mixed with multi-column, column sets. And I will make a couple of more. It's the first step I've redone the column mechanism, but it's not yet completely compatible in functionality with the existing one. This is typically an area where I say, after all these years, I finally am going to do something new. You know, a lot of things are doing the old thing better, and a lot of things waiting to be done, and this is one of the things waiting to be done. The bad thing is I don't use it myself because I have normally in my work to typeset relatively stupid documents. So, okay, it's mostly for users that you do the typeset. MAS, this is something that has been on the agenda for a long time. I already have a lot of stuff in place, but I want to re-implement MAS in such a way that we are talking of domains. You're operating in a certain domain, let's say logic or whatever, or and then you say, okay, I have this kind of symbols, this kind of spacing, these rules for typesetting the MAS, so that you can have more isolated. Now you have the funny situation that if you look at the Unicode table, that one symbol can have four names depending on how or where you use it, which is somehow crazy. Yeah, you say I have this symbol and I know that I'm typesetting this kind of MAS, so it should be rendered or spaced or whatever that way. I would like to generalize it. I'm not a MAS expert myself, but I at least know, I think I know enough about
it. So these LaTeX speaks sort of environments, specialized environments for MAS?
Well, it's more than the environment. It's more like that you say, I honestly don't know the right word for that, but if you look at OpenMAS, which is actually now in MASML 3, maybe Johannes knows the proper names for that kind of, how do you call it? In OpenMAS it's called dictionaries. Yeah? You operate in a certain domain, you have a symbol set that belongs to that, but also spacing. Spacing around some characters is different depending if you are, well, in simple calculus, or if you are in whatever kind of other domain. A symbol can be a relation, but it can be an operator. That kind of...
Yeah, it's sort of convention for a brand.
Yeah. And actually, OpenMAS provide that kind of grouping. They call it dictionaries there. And I'm looking into a way to implement that. And one reason is that if you have implemented at the engine level, then you can also easily export it at the EPUB level. So that's more or less related. So this is one of the... for instance, now if you input MAS, you always say, if you have a function f, and fx, yeah, but what is this f? F is a function. It's never never told in your input that it's a function. In Miles ML, you say apply function to. That's basically an apply function operator. We don't have that. So in context, this is actually an apply function command. And that's the kind of additional logic that I would like to bring into it. So to come back to our early discussion, that's your basically your structure, and then the symbols that you enter you want to see. Yeah? And then by providing the structure, it knows what to do with the symbol. But that's a bit ambitious, and well, officially I shouldn't work on it because context is not supposed to do math, according to some people, but... Well, you know, some people think that. Massive optimization, you know, breaking large mass formula in small parts. It's actually, if you can do it at lower level, not that complex. So this is a pet project. This is typically a winter project.
I'm just wondering, because I seem to remember the Bracken package for LaTeX, which I think was a PhD more or less about...
I think Taco looked at converting something like that. The whole thing there is that you operate at the tech level. So you have to reverse engineer.
The idea of Bracken was, of course, correct. The algorithm was nice.
Yes.
But the implementation was horrible compared to what we can do now.
Because it does it all in tech and you, you can do it in Lua or even at the engine level.
But the thing is, if you have to do that, it is a kind of reverse engineering a formula. Well, actually, this information at the Lua end is there. You have this whole stuff already done. So you can see what are the optimal points, and if you have tech a little bit, you know it. It's easier, basically, to do that. I would never do this at the tech level.
That's LaTeX 3 for you.
I'm not familiar with what happened there.
Would be Mark 9 again.
We will come back to Mark 9 later. Yeah. General dependency trees. I mentioned already namespaces. If I've got all the, you know, it's very difficult to make a tech system which is top-down dependent, so to say. Yeah, this depends on this, depends on, forget about it. There's always the font system. You know, you first need a font system, but the font system assumes a language thing. It also assumes to be present at the same time. I still have the idea that it's somehow possible to have a proper dependency tree. On the other hand, if it will lead to 2,000 more files, I will not do it. Because, okay, then you might have to split it up in such small pieces that is no longer doable. This makes it possible, actually, to make small subsets of context, so that you can have, I want to make, that. What was the basic idea, I want to make a small version dedicated for this kind of usage, which doesn't carry all the other things that... All error messages need checking. I think I will delegate that to users. All the XML definitions, so we have a formal definition of the interface.
Checking in what sense? Being properly placed or being properly formulated?
That's one thing. There's a translation issue. So they come in six languages. So that has to be synchronized again for some messages. And there are messages gone. You know, I have an abstract database of messages. And sometimes they're just gone because they're no... you're using the wrong encoding. Let's say there's no encoding anymore. So the message can go. And I never filtered it that way. So it's something that I postponed.
Standard way of doing it in open source code is that your strings requiring translation are marked specially.
Yeah.
So then
true.
You run through the code and get out get all the messages out and then you get the context in which they appear.
That's the case. That we already had that from the beginning. So yeah. I have one file that I have to check and run it against the source to see where it's called and whatever. But the thing is, it's I'm not in a hurry with that. Yeah. Also, the thing is, at the Lua end, I have so many more tracing and messages. Not all of them make sense for users in the sense of to translate them in all the languages. That would be painful to have 3,000-4,000 messages being translated that no user ever sees. And that are only for, let's say, Taco and me and a few developers who really want to see what goes on there if something is wrong. Optimized positioning system. It's a bit. I made it better, but at the same time, it's a bit too verbose in my opinion. Positioning means that you can say I position things on the page and just keep track of and relative positions, things like that. Maybe some support for CSS like styling. If you do a lot of HTML, I can imagine that you at some point get accustomed to that way of thinking and defining styles. might look into that. Modules. I need to go over all the modules and see.
Question to that CSS thing. Is there now some CSS like styling system? Do you apply after you? How is it applied? In HTML, it is so that the engine, when it displays, gets some raw code marked and then gets the stylish information. How is it being done here? I can't see that.
Actually, context is not so far away from that. Everything is inherited. So you start somewhere, and something is cloned, inherits properties, etc., etc. There's always a whole chain of dependencies. So if you say, I have a...
Where do you place the CSS-like thing for a context document?
There are a couple of...
Coming out in PDF.
No, there are a couple of properties of CSS. Let's say that you have this building block, which has properties like margins and whatever, that it might make sense to add a similar model to context. We basically have it. We have the framed macro, which has 50% of that stuff. We have a lot of stuff that has that kind of stuff. So I can imagine that there will be a separate module that implements something like that. So that if you come from if you have made a nice web page and you say, okay, I want to actually render that kind of stuff, that is closer, easier to translate that to something context.
So a module you input and fiddle only with the module and not the basic stuff.
So that's something like I sometimes playing with the ID. It's not that nobody ever asked for it, but some styles the same is true. I know that there are a couple of presentation styles simply broken because I made them for one purpose, never generalized them. Probably not in the distribution, but on my machine, I think it's a waste of time not to distribute them. So I need to look at them, make them suitable for the distribution, etc. Winter. Time. Renaming context variant project is a long-term thing I already mentioned. Maybe define an official API. I'm not sure. Still not sure about that. to come up with, let's say, if you really want to use some low-level stuff, that they can actually do it. Some manuals need to be updated. Quite some manuals still apply. The same functionality, same things, like widgets, it's still there and the same. Yeah, okay, maybe some more is possible, but... So what I have to keep in mind is that what is handy for me is not always handy for all users. Yes, I can keep adding features, but it's not necessarily a good thing. That doesn't mean that there will be no new things, and that's the next part of this talk. I'll show some of that. You know, most of what ends up in context ends up there because I, at some point, used it myself. And one of the things that we always had been making the last decade is systems to process text somehow, using some web servers or whatever. And I'm thinking of moving part of that framework into the distribution. The thing is that some of the code is already there. Users never notice or whatever, but it's simply, and the reason is that it's so much more convenient if you are setting up a server or a system to have something in a well-defined structure like TDS or a tech directory structure. That's one of the, I think, underestimated properties of tech distribution. For instance, if you take, let's say, a web framework, you can take Ruby on Rails, or you can take Kepler from Lua, or you can whatever. It's always somewhat messy to integrate it with other things. Now, tech is always nicely integrated system. You have the fonts, you have the binaries, you have everything. So for me, it's much more easier if I have scripts that can be used to set up a web server, or web service, basically, to process tech documents, to integrate that in the tech distribution. Because then I have one place where I maintain the scripts. If I install tech, I have already installed 80% of what I need to install, and I only have to install the specific stuff for that project. So I'm now slowly generalizing some of these things and moving them into the distribution. Maybe some users will have noticed, probably most won't. And it's just because it is way more convenient to have one installation. I will give an example of that.
Can I interrupt you once more? What means do the users have to notice your changes? Like you do some notes, side notes which are accessible, or is there a SVN with backtracker or whatever?
All the let's say the betas, not so much the regular distribution, always checked into SVN repository. Marcia is still in the process of setting up a repository where even all the betas go in. Actually, she puts the betas in some Git repository, but I think she's been too busy to finish that part. And there
so
are some.
So, since you read the SVN entries, then you can get some clue what.
You can get a reasonable idea of what the changes are. On the other hand, if there's something important, I always mention it on the list. And I am always surprised by some users who somehow, I think, they just diff everything.
Comparing
that
sources?
Yeah, so they start telling other users that this or that is new, even to the level, oh yeah, okay, it's new. Yeah, that I myself have to realize that I did it once and that. So, it's a really strange phenomenon that you see. I think Wolfgang is very good in that, and saying, no, you don't do it that way, you do it that way. And the that way is something new, yeah? That he somehow picked up out of a diff or whatever. And Sietse has the same. Sietse also is, we have the wiki later this week, there will be a talk about that. This guy, he keeps track of everything and he immediately puts it on the wiki. So it's being described as soon as it's new, which is interesting to see, and I think a good thing. So, and the other thing that happens is sometimes users make an example, or I put examples myself. There's a context test suite where I put examples in. So people who keep track of the test suite always see, oh, wait a minute, he was testing this kind of stuff, so that must be new. But there are different signals that users can pick up. There's a danger on that, because ideally I would say it's only when it's really finished that something is official and should be used. And sometimes something shows up before it has reached a state.
You are guilty yourself.
Yeah, I'm getting myself. But I don't want to have two systems, one for myself and one for the users. So, let's say, the main reason, as I mentioned, that something shows up in context is because I use them myself. So the last 3-4 months I've been working on some project where I've been had to do some database-related stuff, so that's why database-related code is now showing up in context distribution. And the same is true, as I mentioned, for tech servers. One of the problems of if you run tech in a workflow where users, let's say, the input stuff and has to be processed, is to make sure that your tech document gets processed. Yeah, you can never process it as part of a web service because it's blocking as hell. Yeah, and even if you have a decent threaded system, having 10 tech jobs run on parallel on a web server is not a good idea. And if it are thousands of users, it's even a worse idea. So you need a subsystem where you can say, okay, I have this tech job, I register the tech job, it has to be processed, and at some point it's done and has to be signaled that it's done. So we have already for quite a while, but now I'm actually making it such a way that I think it can go into the distribution. A system for setting job tickets, getting things done, polling systems that things are done, etc., etc., so that you can have a bit more scaling in that area. And as I said, it makes sense to put that all in the tech distribution or the context distribution, because then it's part of the well-developed TDS infrastructure. So what can users do? They can keep an eye on updates, of course. Lucky me, people like Wolfgang keep an eye on the updates, so that means that if there's some kind of bug showing up, that I think a bug related to a change can be a simple typo, yeah? I rename a command and I forget that to change something else. These are often found very soon. Following the mailing list definitely helps. For instance, Sietse, he will talk later this week, is he's doing a great job on keeping up the wiki. I'm also very grateful to some people like Peter. He is always keeping track of changes in PDF specification, or checking, let's say, the peculiar things that PDF viewers or whatever do with this specification. So this is why Context is currently quite able to generate, you know, like the PDF A, PDF X, whatever kind of stuff, with all the proper information and things like that, just because he keeps an eye on that kind of stuff, I don't really have to spend time on that. That's really fine. And then there's Aditya, who always makes certain kind of modules that sometimes uses have a demand that, oh, I would like to do this, and say, oh yeah, okay, I can program it, and then lucky me, Aditya can add it to one of his modules. Is that really? Is that you?
No, that's not me. That's why I'm not.
Of course, Luigi is the one who always, if there's a problem with a platform, I can just ignore the message on the mailing list and wait till Luigi comes up with an answer. So it's not something I'm doing alone. I can only do this because there are so many others who help me. Well, it's basically to keep the whole show running and make sure that we have workable systems. Okay. So what do we have currently? We have Mark II, and we have actually, at some point, this is something that might have gone unnoticed, MP2. So when I decided it no longer makes sense to share the MP code for Mark IV with two, I decided to split all the Metapos files too. So now we have Mark IV and MP4. So the code that is used for Mark IV, the MP code, has the suffix MP4. That's especially to do with things like extensions, things like that. Then we have a couple of features that relate to Mark 6. How many of you know what Mark 6 is, if they know what Mark 4 is at all?
Mark 4 was a tank.
You should know. Yeah, you should know what Mark 6 is if you would have attended all the Bagotech presentations.
Telling something about it last year, but I can't remember.
You forgot it. Okay, I will show it.
Some famous lineup of people.
Then, recently, I introduced Mark 9 and Mark 11.
Oh,
yes? I want to stick to 4. Okay, this is more. Okay, nobody will use it, but it's there. Yeah. So I will give some examples of what I mean there, just to give you an idea.
Mark M?
Yeah, well, the problem is that I want to stick to four symbols, so that will be Mark 101, Mark 99. So the C is the only one left then. Oh, D, we have D. Yeah?
D.
D. D and C. Yeah, L. Oh, L.
M.
M, yeah. Okay, there are more. So this is a Mark 4 file, yeah? I just want to indicate the difference between 4 and 6. Mark 4 file, you define a macro like this. Yeah? Not that many users define macro, but if you really want to define a macro, you can define it like this. So you can process this. Yeah, so this says, my name is Hans and I come from Hasselt. Which makes sense because I ended Hans here in Hasselt, there my name is Hans and I come from Hasselt. Yeah? That is easy. Where is it? However, if you have many arguments, you can get you quickly lose track of what your things are. So this is what Mark 6 is about. Mark 6, if I process this file, yeah, I get the same, of course, same output. Mm-hmm. And it has names.
Meaning in those
calculated more.
So this is...
Will there be a limit of names and locations?
Of course, there's a limit of 9. Hard code limit. But nesting works...
In Mark 9, it will be not.
Yeah, well, then I will have to start reprogramming Lua there. Now, if... if I can get Paco to write on Luater before the end of the year, I might start thinking about re-implementing Luater and Lua. I have sometimes thinking about that, but I'd rather not do that.
It's quite easy to hit the nine number.
To be honest, I know. No, the problem, in context you seldom hit it, because as soon as you need more arguments for this like that, you start using key value like approaches. And then you can have as many as you want.
Sometimes more complicated than that.
Okay, but that depends on the way your method of writing matters. I seldom need it. The nice thing is it works nested, etc., etc. So what it is basically preprocessing. And because in context we have complete control over all the file input and output, I can just do it runtime. There's hardly any overhead, and it works quite well. And I must say, if you are rewriting macros, you often are doing things like reshuffling arguments. Now, there's nothing as bad as reshuffling arguments and mixing up numbers. Okay, I want to swap 1 and 2, and you have to make sure that it happens everywhere. Yeah, it's easier to do it this way, because then you never. If I now swap location and name, I don't need to change the body of the macro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is
it's something that it's useful.
Yeah. It's already old, yeah. So if you look at some 65 files in the context distribution are marked 6 files.
Already?
Yeah. So quite some files really use this, because it's much more easier to maintain. And these are not even the small files, yeah. Yeah, it's longer. So here there is some 1 megabyte of files using this stuff. This is another variant. Okay, I miss a file here. Okay, I will do the inline version, because I forgot to copy a file here. You know, one of the things I'm doing currently quite a lot is doing things for web services. And for web services, there is this trickery where you have these template files. Yeah, so you can have these template files. This is XML, actually. I should try to find the other example, which is easier to see. This is a test suite. I'm not going to waste time on locating this file now. So you have to believe that this piece, normally you can put it in a separate file, yeah, and then it's rendered slightly different. So if I do this, then it looks more like XML. This is a way of templating HTML pages, is that you make a sort of you basically input an XML, have an XML file, and you mix it with your code. Yeah. So when I was doing that, for an XML, HTML related project, so well, I have this template machinery in context now, but that can do all that kind of stuff, so why not do it with Tech? So you start thinking the other way around. So what you basically do is that you input your Tech stuff. I use this XML escape in my Tech document, so this is why I can also have it show it here, because then it's more clear that it's a Tech document. Yeah. So this is a Mark 11 document actually. It's tech mixed with Lua code in this way. Now the interesting, you might wonder why do you want to do it. What you see here is that here I have Lua code. It does context calls. Yeah. And this is mostly Lua code. And this is actually less lines of code. Yeah, it's sometimes more efficient to do it this way. So that you say, I have a template, basically a big blob of tech code, which is a template, and I fill in bits and pieces, and the bits and pieces
are defined like this,
this Lua code. But because I had the other system already, I said it was a few lines of code to make this system, and I just would like to... The markers
really.
The markers are processing instructions. XML, this is XML processing instructions. Yeah?
That says that code injected.
Yeah, yeah, but this basically everything in XML that starts with this is a processing instruction. You can make your own.
That's not only PHP.
No, it's every in everything. So in XML, if I would do this. This is valid.
It's
valid.
Itself,
yeah, it can be interpreted by a machinery that knows what yours is, but it's ignored by everything else. Yeah, it's one step behind command. Yeah.
Yes,
so yeah, you have. I think you have PHP. I think JavaScript. There's JavaScript stuff like that. And why shouldn't there be Lua stuff? So this is one of this is already very old. This is one of the first thing I wrote actually in Lua Tech. So there are several ways of doing this. Yeah. So a Mark 11 file is just like a Mark 6 file, but one step further, and that accepts this one. Yeah. And a Mark 9 file is still #1/#2. So I keep them in sync. Okay. Never mind. This is again a file. If I process this file, the context recognizes this automatically. It's pre-processed and converted. Yeah, and there's a way to pass variables from your document variables to pass variables to this template. So you can say, yeah, make one template, and I can call it this way with this set of variables, or that way with that set of variables, and I get a different outcome. It's more like a joke, but maybe some users like it. It's just like you have to do something new every.
So here it's probably you are getting rid of the naming variables that which you are filling in into the template call.
Yeah, well, what you actually
in a sense.
So as you can see, this the top example. This is actually slightly less code than the rest. So there are cases where you say it's easier to make a template and fill in the, say that you have a lot of tech code, yeah, really a lot of tech code, but only a few variables, then the template approach is more efficient. Yeah, because you define these blob of tech in the usual way and the few variables you call up. If it's reverse, you have a lot of, let's say that I have a lot of calculations to fill these cells, then it makes sense to have a lot of Lua code. And a couple of lines of tech code are dealt with this way. So it really always depends on the kind of problem that you have.
Once it's time for coffee.
Oh.
You have to wrap this up a bit.
I had another example. I wanted to show some art, and I can do that in a later talk. I can move that.
Yeah, do that.
Okay, so. About the cleanup, let's summarize it this way. I'm done to a large extent, but not yet finished. Probably need the whole winter to go through the rest of the files. One way.
Send you to South Pole.
No. The best thing, no. I occasionally order a stack of CDs, and then I can go along quite, in loop mode. I can go on a couple of weeks, and then. And it should not interfere. Currently, my work is a bit interfering with this kind of thing. Occasionally, I need to do some work. Yeah.
It's a drone to work.
Yeah. Well, you know the feeling. Okay. Coffee break.